It's my great pleasure to welcome Mary Gaucher to the show for the very first time. Welcome, Mary.
Hey, everybody.
Now, you're making the trip up to Winnipeg for the 30th anniversary of the Winnipeg Folk Festival.
What an honor. I'm so glad to be on the bill.
Is this your first trip to Winnipeg?
It is.
I don't know if you've heard anything about the festival, but there's a whole lot of great music going on here. It's quite a huge festival, and there's a whole lot going on. I think you're going to have a lot of fun here.
Oh, believe me, I've heard about Winnipeg. I think everybody I know jumps over each other trying to get booked to that festival. The Canadian festivals are much loved by Americans, let me tell you. You guys know how to treat people. It's just a joy to be able to be a part of it.
There are a lot of people that I'm looking forward to seeing, but I got to be honest with you, Mary. You're right at the top of the list.
Hey, thanks. You're making my day here.
I've been listening for a couple of years and haven't ever had the opportunity to see you live, but I think this is going to be a good one.
Well, I'm just getting started up in Canada, and it's been a joy. I found a record company here, and I found an agent, and I'm starting to really focus on meeting some people this year in Canada, and it's been a lot of fun. I'm just so excited to break into a new territory and find my footing up here.
It's a huge country. I mean, we don't have a whole lot of people living here, but it's a huge country. Is it nerve-wracking coming up here and trying to?
No, not at all. It's absolutely wonderful. What's nerve-wracking is sitting at home in Nashville not doing it.
The latest album is Filth and Fire, and it's I guess it's been out for a while. In the States, anyway.
It's been out about a year in the States, yeah. But we just got the release in Canada a few months ago, maybe even a few weeks ago. I don't even know when they released it in Canada.
Yeah, it certainly wasn't long ago, anyway.
No.
Has it done what you had hoped it would do?
Well, you know, because of the nature of what I do, it was told to me a long time ago by Mr. John Prine's manager, Al Bonetta. He said, "Kid, it's one record at a time, one fan at a time." And, you know, if there's anybody who I try to be like, it's John Prine, and that's how he had to do it, so I don't imagine it's going to be any different for me. You know, you meet one person at a time when you're doing songs like mine. It's not a pop-based, mass media type thing that I do, you know.
So what do you do then?
Well, what I do is I try to sing real songs from about real people who are in real trouble. And I try to make it compelling so that people who have lived a little bit can relate to the characters and their struggles, and hopefully everybody makes it through all right, you know. But sometimes in the end, you don't know. It's just a question mark. It's like life itself. You're still capable of hope as long as the heart is beating, you know.
Right. Well, it sounds like you have certainly lived a little bit. Do most of these songs and tales come from your own life?
Well, they certainly come from things that I understand. I can't write about things I haven't experienced or I don't understand. A lot of it is autobiographical, but a lot of it is just I look out and I see things and I write about it. But I can't look out and see things and understand everything, so I just write about what I understand.
Well, you certainly write about a lot of perhaps pain and frustration and stuff that you've had in your life. Is it hard laying that much of yourself out in a song?
Well, quite frankly, I think that's the songwriter's job. And if a songwriter doesn't do that, then I'm just bored to tears. You know, if an artist is not giving it up, who's gonna in this world?
Yeah.
You got to get real somewhere, and it's I think it's pretty much left up to artists now. And if I don't do that, then I think I'm failing at my job.
Do you have to suffer to make great art?
Well, I think you have to suffer if you're going to live on this planet. It's part of life to come into conflict and try to find your way through it. And in between conflict and resolution is probably some pain. And the best way to get through it is just to not die and try to learn the lessons in front of you. I don't think you have to hit bottom to make great art, but I don't know how you can be human and not have pain.
Right. When you're writing these songs about pain and stuff, who is that for? Is that for you to help heal, you know, what you've felt, or are you trying to connect with other people and teach them sort of what you've learned?
You know, it's so strange. It starts out so personal in my room alone, putting this together, trying to give my own self the chills when I write this stuff. And then it becomes so not about me. At a certain point, these are like little babies, and when they grow up and you release them into the world, they're not about me anymore. You know, I guess every songwriter hopes that the kids will grow up and make a life of their own, independent of them, and it's just a process of letting go of it and hoping the world embraces it really and takes it from me and makes it into what it's going to be without me.
So is there any way for you to know when a song is ready to be unleashed on the world?
Oh, the audience lets you know. Yeah. If you make the mistake and bring it out before it's ready, the audience will let you know in their own special way. You know, half-hearted applause, or they start talking in the middle of the song, or there's a way to captivate people as a folk singer, and there's a way to lose people, and I think I've got a pretty good understanding of both. It's just I'm not sure when I'm doing what, and they let you know.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. So are they the ultimate judge then? Do you always try out your new stuff on an audience before you can...
That's the ideal thing for me. You know, a lot of artists don't have that opportunity. When you're working with bigger record companies, they put you on these cycles, and you got to make a record really quick, and you don't have a chance to put the songs in front of people. I hope that I'll always have the opportunity to do that, because it's for me, it's where I get my confidence. I don't get my confidence in the room alone. I get my confidence when people come up to me and say, oh, my God, that song reminds me of something that happened to me.
Right. So are you able to connect with people in a larger room or in a noisier room anyway?
The noisy rooms are tough, but there's a lot of tricks that I've learned over the years how to make a noisy room work.
Uh-huh.
I'll play almost anywhere. You know the thing for me is to be able to have a shot at it, and every night I get up on stage and I just take my shot, and hopefully I'll connect, and you know, there's no telling if it's going to work or not. Every night's an adventure, which is, I think, why I get deeper into this and fall deeper in love with it. It's certainly not a given that it's going to work. You're up there looking for some kind of a magic, and magic is not always there, and when it is there, it's just so incredible, and when it's not there, it's just so disappointing, and you want to go find it again. So it becomes like a compulsion, obsession thing, and it, you know, it's just an incredible journey. So I'll play just about anywhere.
So is that what drives you then, the live performance? That's the real high point of your
job? That's what I'm about. Yeah, the studio thing is just so tedious. It's just so, oh, God, you're aiming for perfection, which is completely inhuman.
Yeah.
And you just have to redo it and redo it and redo it to the point where you want to pull your hair out. Yeah, no, I'm all for live shows and not studio. Studio requires patience, of which I have very little.
Right, but it sounds like, maybe I'm just, putting too much faith in you, but it sounds like you work hard at these songs to make them as perfect as you can, and maybe you're just naturally gifted and they come out this way. But
I think the writing part...
a wonderful, wonderful song.
Oh, the writing part is extremely drawn out and difficult. I don't just sit down and write them. You know, I'm not Dylan. I can't write Blowing in the Wind in a cab on the way to the studio. I have to work real hard at them, and it shouldn't even be called writing, really. It should be called song rewriting, because you start with something, and then you just start hammering on it, and you chisel it, and you're looking for David under the stone, you know. You're Michelangelo with a block of marble and hoping for the best, and if you stop hammering before it's done, it looks like a deformed David, you know?
Really?
So you just got to keep going with it, and it takes a long time to get there. And hopefully I'll never get lazy and just say that's good enough, because good enough is actually a self-lie, and it's a deception, and it's not good. Good enough is not good enough. It better be the best possible song it can be, or people are going to be bored, you know? There's so many songwriters now, and there's so many songs. I'm trying to get to the highest possible good that I can come to when I write these things, and so it involves just patience and sticking with it.
What's the best part of a song? Like when what's a really good song for you?
Oh, you know, there's this thing that happens when you hit the truth on the head with a hammer or a nail, and it's the Dutch call it chicken skin, when you get goosebumps on your arms and your hair stands up. And you just know you've been hit by something that's big, and I'm aiming for that. You know, and if I give that to myself with the song, then I know the audience will get it. And if I don't, I know the audience won't.
Who writes great songs? I mean, other than John Prine, obviously, that you mentioned. But who writes a good song? Who do you model yourself after, maybe?
Well, I've been on the road with a legendary songwriter named Guy Clark.
Wow, yeah.
And he gives me chicken skin every night, even 2 years into it. That's another amazing thing about these truths. is they don't stop being true. The chicken skin will reappear every single time, and you know, Hank Williams sort of set the standard there for what I'm trying to do is simple songs about important things that never become unimportant.
Right.
And you know, old Hank and Woody Guthrie were the two American icons of this type of writing, this folk/country, and everybody else is just trying to do what they already did, tell you the truth. And there's a whole lot of people that succeed. Certainly, Bruce Springsteen in his acoustic moments is someone who nails it just extremely hard. He's the son of Woody and Hank, even though he's from New Jersey. Steve Earle, John Prine, particularly in his early years, did it for me big time. Lucinda's up to something special. There's Nancy Griffith, who fused country and folk and came up with what she called folkabilly, but what I just call great songwriting early on there. And there's a whole lot of people doing it. None of them are as successful or famous anyway as Bruce Springsteen. But you find them at the folk festivals. You find them at the 200 seat listening rooms. They're out there. They're not in it for the money. They're in it for the chicken skin. You know, they're in it for the hair raising on the arms. It's not pop music. It's something else.
Well, a perfect example of that, one guy that I didn't know if you'd mention or not, was Fred Eaglesmith. And I know that's a lot of my listeners anyway have gotten to you through Fred. You've worked with Fred before.
Well, I have to say that of all the artists on the road working today that I've had the pleasure of working with, he's the best.
He's the best.
He's beyond everybody that I've ever seen on stage, including Bruce, because Bruce is so big now that it's hard for him to do Bruce well. He's become a guy who does Bruce.
Yeah.
But see, Fred is vital right now. He's at the peak of his I don't know, he's at the top of his game. And he's incredibly good. And he's incredibly real. And you can't watch Fred without falling in love with him. He's amazing. He's just astonishing. And I'm so proud to be his friend, you know. He's done it his way. He's done it the hard way. He's out there in this old bus with this band that just does 250 shows a year, and they'll play anywhere. You give them a gig, they'll play there. And he's my role model, to be honest. Yeah, Fred, he's the guy, that's for sure. And his new record is fantastic. You know, I have to tell you the truth. I wasn't a big bluegrass fan. I never really understood bluegrass. It just seemed like a whole lot of notes to me.
Yeah.
Until Fred did this bluegrass record, and suddenly, oh, that's what bluegrass is. And I get it. And he's opened my eyes to something I didn't understand. He's the best. He sure is.
And we should mention there's a new Fred Eaglesmith tribute CD, and you do Your Sister Cried and do a wonderful job of that.
Well, yeah.
Mary, I know you got to get going here real soon, but I'd love to play something off the CD. Well, I'm going to play something off the CD. I want you to perhaps tell me a story, pick a song for us, because I love them all.
Let's see, what do I really like right now? I've been getting a lot of positive response with the song I wrote about the people burning sugarcane down in South Louisiana.
Well, that's my favorite song on the CD, Sugar
No
Cane.
Kidding.
Yep.
Well, turns out I've been playing up in Quebec, and it turns out that mentioning all those French towns really turns people on up in the French-speaking areas, and I'm learning that there's a real bond between South Louisiana and a lot of folks up here in Nova Scotia and Quebec, and I'm just in love with the fact that this is going to work really good. I'm finding people that I don't have to say a whole lot to. We already understand each other.
Well, the song is called Sugar Cane. It's on Filth and Fire, the brand new record by, well, I guess it's new to us anyway, Mary Gaucher. And it's been a real treat having you on the show today, and I'm really looking forward to seeing you in Winnipeg.
Hey, thanks for the interview. I sure appreciate it.
The pleasure is all mine, and hopefully we'll see you through again doing your own thing after you head to the Winnipeg Folk Festival next week.
Thank you so much. Take care. Bye now.
Mama says she don't give a damn what those people say. Cane smoke can't be good for you day after day. here at harvest time, when the black smoke filled the sky, she'd pick me up and take me home and make me stay inside.
Dirty rain.